Welcome to another family Bible study. Once again, we're going to look together into the Word of God to try to discover truth. And we've been spending a lot of time in the book of Jeremiah. And it is a very, very complex book, a very difficult book, the way God has written it. In fact, He's really hidden the truth that's in it from the churches throughout the church age, because I don't think anyone in the church has ever suspected that it was teaching like we are learning that it is teaching, because we are learning that it is dealing right with our day all the way through the book of Jeremiah. And it's a very large book, and yet it is dealing with our day. And it is right now we're in Jeremiah 51, and the context is, or it begins in verse 1, "Thus saith the Lord," of course, that's "thus saith Jehovah." God is reiterating again and again and again and again, "Look, these are my words. These are my words. Listen. Behold, I will raise up against Babylon and against them that dwell in the midst of them, that rise up against me a destroying wind, and I will send unto Babylon fanners," and so on. In other words, we remember when we looked at that a few studies ago, it had to do with the fact that Babylon is going to be chaff. It's going to be winnowed like grain is winnowed, and they will be chaff that will blow away and not exist. Well, we finally got down to verse 19, and it introduces a very, very interesting and somewhat difficult passage. Thou art my battle axe and weapons of war. And I remember, I've said this before, I remember a few years ago I went through this chapter very carefully, and I just had a difficult time. Really difficult time trying to figure out who God was talking about here when He was talking about who is the battle axe. Because back in Jeremiah chapter 15, He is talking about Babylon. Jeremiah chapter 50, he says in verse 23, "How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder and broken? How is Babylon become a desolation among the nations?" Here He gives them the title or the characteristic of being the hammer of the whole earth. This is in Jeremiah 50, verse 23, and now we're here in Jeremiah 51, and He talks about, "Thou art my battle axe," and that. That's something to break in pieces. In fact, He's going to go on. By the time we get down to verse 21, "With thee I will break in pieces the horse and his rider, and with thee I will break in pieces the chariot and his rider," and so on. And we suspect, in fact, commentaries that write about this normally think that Babylon is still being talked about. But we're going to learn that this is not talking about Babylon at all. It's not talking about Satan. Surprisingly, it's going to be talking about the true believers in the day of the rapture. It always finally gets down to that, Satan comes against the church. And remember, I have to keep looking at these verses and order to keep the thinking straight, because we have a God here, we have Babylon, we have the churches, we have the believers, and just how do they all integrate together? And it's very, very easy to get confused. Remember, in Revelation 13, we read there that Satan, who is the king of Babylon, typified by Babylon, in verse 7, "It was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And power was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations." And We have to keep that in mind. God has given Babylon the and in Ezekiel chapter 38, he talks about Babylon. I will draw you with hooks in your jaws and bring you against the camp of the saints. And we read that in Revelation chapter 20, that he will make war with the camp of the saints. Let's see, how does that language go in Revelation chapter 20? In verse 8, and it's talking again about Satan. Thou shalt go up to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about, and the beloved city. So that is Satan coming with, by God's action. I will draw you, God said. God is in charge of this. It isn't because Satan finally figured it out how to get victory over Christ, but God is drawing him, has brought him into the churches, and brought him into the world as official ruler of the world during this period of great tribulation in order to destroy. That's why it says in 1 Peter, it says that judgment begins with the house of God. That is where Satan is preparing them for their time into the day of judgment. And outside of the churches, he is out there preparing them for their time into the day of judgment. That's why he is called the battle. He is the hammer of the whole earth. He is out to destroy. And so when commentators, and I would do this too normally, when I would first look at it in Jeremiah 51, we would, when it says, I will break in pieces the nations, and with thee I will destroy kingdoms, it seems to fit very well with Babylon. But it's not going to fit the way it should fit to be consistent with everything else in the Bible. Now let's back up. Let's start with verse 19. The portion of Jacob is not like them. Now, he is talking about in verse 17, remember, every man is brutish, that is, every man is stupid by his knowledge. Every founder is confounded, that is, ashamed by the graven images, for his molten image is falsehood, and there is no breath in him. They are vanity, the work of, and that word errors is really the work of the delusion, and they shall perish. Now he's talking here about the unsaved of the world who are, they're looking horrible, they're under the wrath of God, they're being shamed, there's nothing good about that. They are stupid, as if they don't have a single brain in their head at all. But then he says in verse 19, the portion of Jacob is not like them. Now the word portion means it's the part of Jacob. But the word portion can also be understood. Let's see, I made a little note here. The word portion can also be understood as inheritance. We find it normally always translated portion or part. But the context shows that it can be inheritance, and that's why in Psalm 16, verse 5, we read, the Lord, or Jehovah, is the portion, that's a different word, the portion of mine inheritance. The word inheritance is the same word that we find here in Jeremiah chapter 51, is the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my Lot. Now, incidentally, we better figure out who Jacob is. And if we go to Psalm 24, there we read in Psalm 24, verse 1, I believe it is. No, verse 6. Verse 6, this is the generation of them that seek him, that seek thy face, O Jacob. Now, in other words, Jacob is another name for God himself, for Christ himself. He's the only one that the believers seek. They seek thy face, O Jacob. And that ties back into in Jeremiah 51, where we're reading the portion of Jacob or the inheritance of Jacob, to show that portion and inheritance are very, very, very close together. If we go to Deuteronomy chapter 32, verse 9, there it talks about, for the Lord's, or Jehovah's portion is his people. Jacob is the lot of his inheritance. His people, of course, are Jacob, and they're also called Isaac. And in this case, it's Jacob that he speaks about the people. So Christ is called Jacob. The people are called Jacob. And by the same token, Christ is called, or the people are called Israel, and in places, Christ is called Israel, because that means Prince of God, and he is the very king. But going back to Jeremiah 51, verse 19, the portion or the inheritance of Jacob or the inheritance of Christ is not like them. Now, who is the inheritance of Christ? Who is the of God? The body of true believers. We are sons of God. We are his inheritance. And we are not like these who God has described here in verse 18, that they are vanity, the work of delusion, and so on. And then he goes on, and in their visitation, that is, then that word visitation signifies the time of judgment, they shall perish. And the portion, that is the inheritance of Jacob or of Christ, is not like them. For he, as we're talking here about Christ, is the former of all things. And he is able to make of the clay, you remember, he can make a vessel of honor and a vessel of not of honor, of dishonor. And now he's going to be talking about those whom he has formed, who are really vessels of honor, although that focus is not emphasized here. But it is something that is in contradiction or in opposite of whatever he had been talking about in verse 17, about the shame and the stupidity of natural man. The inheritance of God is something that is quite different. And then he says, for Israel is the rod of his inheritance, the Lord of hosts is his name. You notice that the word Israel is italicized. Why did the translators put the word Israel there? Why doesn't it just say, the portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things, the rod of his inheritance? Well, in this verse, God has indicated he is the former of the rod of his inheritance, but it's not disclosing who it is. And God has done this, of course, always for a purpose, and that is, come on, you got to search it out, compare Scripture with Scripture. And lo and behold, we go to Jeremiah chapter 10, and we have virtually the same sentence, but where we find out what that rod is, or who that is. We read in Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 16, the portion of Jacob is not like them. And look again in verse 15, verse 14 and 15 are a duplication of what we find in Jeremiah 51. Every man, verse 14 says, every man is brutish or stupid. In his knowledge, every founder is confounded, is ashamed by the graven image. It's exactly the same statement. They are vanity, and the work of errors, or the work of confusion or the work of delusion, in the time of their visitation they shall perish. Exactly the same verses. Then he says, the portion of Jacob is not like them, for he is the former of all things, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. Now notice these three verses are identical to what we have reading in Jeremiah 51, except this one has the word Israel, just giving a tiny bit more definition. But it assures us beyond a shadow of a doubt that the translators, when they italicized or put the word Israel in there, they got that right. Indeed, that is what God is teaching, that Israel is the rod of his inheritance. And that word inheritance, notice again, it ties back into the word portion. What is the portion of Jacob, of the portion of Christ? It is his inheritance, that is of the Lord, the Jehovah of hosts is his name. Now, this is a very interesting verse to puzzle about. They all are. Every verse is interesting to puzzle about, but sometimes we can understand it a little easier than some others. And here it is, and Israel is the rod of his inheritance. Now the word rod is a very interesting word because it is used to speak about a scepter, someone who rules. The rod is used in the sense of Psalm 2. Let's go back to Psalm 2 a minute. We're going to look at that a little bit more too. In Psalm 2, verse 9, thou shalt break, let me get the context. Ask of me, and I shall give thee the heathen for thine inheritance, and the uttermost parts of the earth for thy possession. Thou shalt break them with a rod. There it is, the same word, the rod of iron. Thou shalt dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Okay, let's just, we're going to go back to this verse presently, but we know there that it is using the same word rod, and it is used elsewhere to indicate a rod that is used to destroy, a rod that is used to destroy. But the word rod is also a very common word that is translated a tribe. Thou art the tribe of mine inheritance. I didn't even write down a cross-reference because it's found so frequently that Israel is the tribe. So when we're looking at Jeremiah 51, God has really said two things. And what does God have in view here? He is saying, I'm going to read verse 19, the portion or the inheritance of Jacob, of God, is not like them, for he is the former of all things. In other words, he can make a vessel of honor. And Israel is the rod of his inheritance. The Lord of hosts is his name. We know that Israel, we know because it's talking about Israel, we know we could read this, and so Israel is the tribe of his inheritance, is the tribe of his inheritance. But then we have to include, before we see the beautiful ties-ins here that God gives us, the last phrase, the Lord of hosts is his name. Have you ever heard that expression, the Lord of hosts? Yeah, you've heard it about 500 times. That's how often it's found in the Bible. The Lord of hosts. It is a very, very common name. And I have to admit, in my own life, I've seen that, and I've always thought of it, well, it's the Lord of a great number of people. The Lord of a host of people, just a people. But when we study that word host, it's a very, very important word, a very interesting word. It is a word that is normally identified with war, with war. It's a noun, and for example, in Numbers chapter 3, Numbers chapter 1. There we read verse 22. It talks about the children of Simeon. In the last part of the verse, all that were able to go forth to war. We read in verse 24 of the children of Gad. At the end of the verse, all that were able to go forth to war. That's the noun host, that were part of the host. That is, they were part of the army. And then he goes on in verse 26, in the last part of the verse, all that were able to go forth to war. Same word, host. And then down in verse 30, all that were able to go forth to war. It's a word that has to do with war. It is also translated armies. In Exodus chapter 6, verse 26, we read in, these are that Aaron and Moses, to whom the Lord Jehovah said, bring out the children of Israel from the land of Egypt according to their armies. It's the same word, host, according to their armies. Or in chapter 12, verse 51, Exodus chapter 12, verse 51. And we read, and it came to pass the selfsame day that Jehovah did bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt by their armies. It's used as a noun in this way a great number of times. It's also used as a verb. The same word is used as a verb, and it's translated fight. For example, in Isaiah 29, verse 8, it's a long verse. It shall even be as when an hungry man dreameth, and beholdeth he eateth. But he awaketh, and his soul is empty. Or as when a thirsty man dreameth, and behold, he drinketh. But he awakeneth, and behold, he is faint, and his soul has appetite. So shall the multitude of all the nations be that fight, host. That's the verb, host, that fight against Mount Zion. It's again a word of war. We read in Isaiah chapter 31, verse 4, right over page 31, verse 4. And there we read, for thus saith the Lord, Jehovah rather, spoken unto me, like as a lion and a young lion roaring on his plain, when a multitude of shepherds is called forth against him, he will not be afraid of their voice, nor abase himself for the noise of them. So shall Jehovah of hosts come down to fight. Same word, now as a verb, to fight for Mount Zion and for the hill thereof. So, you see, when God says he is the Lord of hosts, and he says it again and again, he is saying that the true believers are an army going forth to war.